more are ready and waiting to get in your belly. Plus, you can also buy fresh and frozen food to prepare at home. Pop into the shop Monday through Sunday between 8 to 6 at 204 Berry Street. And don't forget to follow Old Farm Fine Foods on Instagram at Old Farm FF to get the scoop on the latest goodies. Old Farm Fine Foods, comfort food you can count on.
Welcome to Songwriters from Here and Away. This is a show that focuses on new and established songwriters from Atlanta, Canada, across Canada, and around the world. Hello, and thanks for tuning in. My name is Robert Campbell, and this week I had a call with Mr. Rob Lutz out of Montreal. I've known Rob for a number of years. We've hosted him on the show, some of his songs, and I've had him for live concerts, and we hope to get him back real soon. Rob has garnered many awards over the years and has a number of albums and is a historian of sorts and also an instructor on songwriting and doing a workshop that he'll tell you about. So let's just start right into the interview. Here it is, Rob Lutz. I met you first, I guess, when you were touring through Nova Scotia, what, 10, 11 years ago?
Yeah.
And you did a tour as Sussex, which is your band name usually, right?
Yeah, it's a side project I started in 2016 with an old friend from, I grew up in St. John, outside St. John, and an old friend from there who was a vibraphonist.
Fabulous vibraphonist, Michael Emenow.
Yeah. Well, we just played a gig last week, and what's crazy is, you know, we play regularly. I wouldn't say we play tons, but we play regularly, and it kind of mixed it in with my own shows. But he had just been in the States. He lived in Oakland for 12 years, I think, and he was playing. That's when he really got into full-time playing every night all over the place. And he went back down there and had a week of work, gigging and recording in studios. He actually recorded in Wally Hyder Studios, where they made the Eagles albums and all kinds of important records. Yeah. Anyway, but he was working with some heavyweights. So he was working to get ready to go down, and then he played all week. So we played a gig last Friday, sort of a sit-down theater type show here, and he was just on fire. It was amazing when, you know, because I see him when he hasn't played in a while sometimes, but he was just ripping it, and it was a lot of fun. Yeah.
Here's a live concert take that we recorded back in 2016.
She sleeps in the bedroom with her feet out the door. She's always trying to remember what it felt like before. Oh, oh. And I know a girl who's 5'9". She's whispering low to a voice on the line. She's always waiting, just biding her time. Oh. And I know a girl who's 5'5". She's perfecting her smile, but she's barely alive. Even she doesn't know when she's telling those lies. Dreams and dark desires, it don't take much to tangle entire worlds. We're just like little kids with big ideas. And when our lives are uninspired, we'll book the next best thing for hire. And for a little while, we'll believe it's gonna free us. Well, I know a guy who just can't think small. He's building a just to watch it fall. He's done it before, but he doesn't recall. No, no. And I know a guy who's cuddling slow, and all that he knows is he'll never let go. Well, his baby is gone, only he doesn't know. No. And I know a guy who works straight till dark. He's striking at stones just to capture a spark, but he's missing the point while he's making his mark. Dreams and doomed desires, it don't take much to tangle entire worlds. We're just like little kids with big ideas. When our lives are uninspired, we'll cling to what has got paradise and mired, and for a little while we'll believe it's gonna free. Between you and I, tenet of truthful words must first combine and touch the ragged edges of our souls. He's a little more kind and a lot less confused. Oh, and I know a girl who was icy cold. Now she's learned to tell what she never was told, and it's taken her years, but she's begun to unfold too. And they cool the dreams and calm the desires, release their minds by clipping the wires till the current cannot reach the blind.
So that was Sussex, and we tour. You know, we still play quite a bit. We released an album in 2024, and it's kind of a something that we both get to do just to engage our interests, not for necessarily for commercial gain, but more for
right.
musical fun. Yeah.
There's videos up on our channel of you guys that I did.
Yeah.
So that's 9 years ago, I guess.
Yeah. It was 9 years ago. That's right. Yeah. No, that was a nice room. I enjoyed that show quite a bit. It was a good sounding room.
Yeah,
you still do shows in there?
No, we sold that house and we're in a tiny little condo now. And it's we went from 3,800 square feet to 800 square feet.
Okay.
We downsized tremendously. So that's why our closets are Jenga puzzles. I think you started releasing albums in like 25 years ago. It looks like you've had 10 albums.
Well, I have 8. As Rob Lutz, and I have 3 with Sussex, so 11
right.
technically.
11?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
How do you see the ensuing years since then? How do you feel your writing has changed or your performance? Like, what's been the arc for you?
The arc for me has been from a young person, really, really, I mean, like a lot of people, very into music and learning the guitar. And recording the first album was something that I kind of, you know, I was not someone who had this natural kind of thought that this was my normal path. I come from a family of accountants and, you know, professionals, and musician was not something that was super, super encouraged. I won't say it was discouraged, but it was not encouraged.
Same and, with me. Yeah.
Yeah, you know.
A lot of folks.
Yeah. A lot of people have that, exactly. Yeah. So I made that first album, and it was just like almost terrifying and thrilling at the same time. And then and I was very nervous on stage. I mean, I liked it, but I had, you know, I was not one of these naturally comfortable people.
Right.
And so the arc in terms of that part of it has been from someone who, you know, had some reluctance and some nerves, severe nerves about getting on stage and engaging, to someone who feels very comfortable and enjoys really engaging with audiences and getting to know them and conversing with them from the stage. And so that's been really gratifying. And I use that in, I do on the average probably 5 to 6 shows or workshops a week. Like I'm always doing something with people.
Either so online or in person.
Online or in person. Yeah. And so that's been a very, very, very valuable thing. And it's allowed me to get to know people and to also just bring the passion for music that I have to them. And that's really what we're doing, I think, as musicians, really when it comes right down to it, is we're sharing a passion. And so that's been great.
That was Things We Didn't Choose off Rob's The Bravest Birds album from 2013.
In terms of songwriting, I would say we start out without sort of having the, what's the word? You know, we start out just writing what's from our heart and doing the best we can. And I was lucky that I had a first album that had some really good songs. I look back and they were well-crafted by total by chance. But I guess I had the same instinct. Well, we all have the same model, right? It's like, how do we parent? We had parents. How do we write songs? We heard songs. So I was just modeling on what I heard. And I guess over time, we all seek for different types of hooks and ways to connect and ways to make align words with chords and melodies that are special, you know, that take your breath away. So always searching for that magic moments in songs. And I'd say I'm a little less free in a way now than I was then, because I came in naive, just writing 3-chord songs and not caring. Now, when I write a 3-chord song, I go, ooh, maybe I should do something. So I have to really be careful and try to bring that naivete into my work.
We can overthink it.
Oh,
yeah. It's totally. Very easy, especially the more knowledge we get or the more tools we get in our toolkit. You know, we kind of second guess you know, do we use that that roofing hammer or the framing hammer? You know, ponder those issues more than you should sometimes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and you also have a track record that you feel like you have to live up to and something. But I really think, you know, really trying now to be more like, and I mean, not to, you know, such an overuse, but, you know, a Neil Young who released, you know, 50 records. And I had probably up until the 2000, I had them all. I was a fan of that level. And now, but where, you know, they're not all going to be Heart of Gold. They're not, you know, so you have to just, it's a numbers game. And I teach music and I talk about Irving Berlin, and I've gotten to know his catalog quite well. He published about 1,500 songs. Well, about 30 of them, if I played them for you right now, you'd know them. You'd say, I know that song. About 150 other ones are really good. And then about 1,200 of them
are dog's breakfast, right? Or well, just average.
Average. Yeah. They're very topical. They're dealing with an issue. He has certain qualities that are always there. However, forgettable. Yeah. And so, you know, it's like, this is arguably the greatest writer in history. You could make that argument. And so it's really important that we remember that. Now, that could also make us just toss stuff out. And I think that Neil Young lately has kind of been recording records, like not really working them hard enough, I would say. And so I think there's a danger of just going, and there it is, and I'm moving on the next song. So I'd say you got to find that sweet spot. And every song is different, as you know.
Right.
So it's really awareness, you know, and what am I supposed to do with this song?
Right.
So that's been, fun journey.
That was a track called Shediac Bridge off the 2021 Knives album. Wanted to remind you that we are a podcast, so please give us a like, give us a follow. All that stuff really helps, and it also helps the artists. So look us up online, sfhaa.ca. We are in the interview with Mr. Rob Lutz. Here we are, back at it.
You're writing a lot all the time as well as doing workshops. Do you write solo? Do you co-write? What's the balance there for you?
I mostly write myself. My wife is a sounding board, although as we've had kids, less. We're less accessible to each other, but just in that creative zone, I have co-written with lots of different people over the years, but mainly I write them myself. And then I have a few trusted people that I'll play them for. My guitarist, Rob McDonald, who's, you know, people don't know him around the country, but he's one of the, in Quebec, he's widely known. He's a phenomenal of all styles. And so I played with him since 96. So wow, it's my whole catalog. We've played every cover known to man. And da, da, da.
Great history.
It's great history. And so he'll listen to it and he'll tell me. He'll be very honest with me. And he's usually very encouraging because usually by the time I bring it to him, there's something there. You know, there's something worth something, you know?
You need a trusted partner if you're going to be in that situation. So you got Rob McDonald, you got your partner, your wife.
Yeah.
And honesty with the feedback. I heard someone say that the songs don't fall apart when they're released. They fall apart when they're recorded and people aren't honest.
Yeah.
Right?
For sure.
Like, so you're not honest. The producer, the engineer, the songwriter, the performer isn't honest with themselves or with each other saying that line is not strong enough.
Right.
Or that, you know, that's a great bass track, but, you know, we need something different.
Yeah.
Right?
The other thing that I've relied on, and this was from Ray Bonneville, who used to live in Montreal years ago.
We've had Ray on the show a couple of times. Yep.
Okay. Yeah. So Ray and I were friends. We're still friends. I mean, he doesn't live here, but he, you know, when we were talking about it, and he said it, and I think it's true. When you're in front of an audience and you're singing an original song and you sing that line that's not quite there, you know it.
Right.
Because if you're delivering a song that you really feel good about and strong about and confident in, you don't have those moments where you're sort of mumbling the line or hiding the line, you know. So that's what I really try to make songs that I'm out there and I'm every word I'm going, yeah, this is what I want to say. This is how I want to say it. This is poetic, you know. So.
Right.
And then again, you know, I mean, if we analyzed every song in history from that perspective, so many songs are just so simple and so devoid of any of that kind of thing, and they still work, you know, where, you know, all of these songs, you know, like I was just doing the history of rock and roll, Louis Jordan, Let the Good Times Roll. Come on, everybody, let's have some fun. You only live once, and when you're dead, you're done, so let the good times roll. Let the good times roll. Don't matter if you're young or old, let the good times roll. In that context of a rock and roll song and a party song, a dance song, it's perfect. Yeah. It's not for a sit-down listening crowd. So it's also, you know, dependent on what you're trying to, where you are. Right. And rock and roll song, I think you can really get away with, or a dance song, you can get away with some throwaway lines.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. If people aren't listening, they're just there for the emotion of the song, right?
Or for the groove or whatever. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or the solos and So.
But you did not know. If I was gonna tell you what I think, I would have told you on that hill when the night was cool and still. There was a silence dying to be filled. If I was gonna tell you what I think, I would have told you something true. But then I think it through, what it would mean to me and to you. And ever since, it's never seen the time. brought me to my knees, and how you captured me with
Work of Art off the 2021 Knives album.
So what have you got in the can right now? Or what have you just released an album?
I released an album in last fall. It's been a year since we released
it. It's been a year?
Yeah, it's been a year. It was a Sussex album called Shine, and it was my idea of, because when Michael and I played vibraphone and guitar, well, the first album we had Manouche guitar, whatever you call that in the correct parlance, trumpet, violin, bass, my guitar, and vibraphone. Second album, we had just clarinet and trumpet and vibraphone and guitar. And this last one, I heard a lot of old country, and there's a lot of Motown, which has some vibes in it. Sometimes xylophone, but often it's vibes.
Yeah.
And it's down in the mix.
Yeah,
but it's kind of mixing with the pedal steel a little bit, and sort of carrying the sort of these tones. It's not a solo.
Carrying a pad thing, and
it's
and
like a pad thing.
An ambience,
ambient,
kind
pad.
Of like an electric piano does, like a Rhodes or a whatever does.
Exactly, exactly. And then you know you have it in certain tunes like "Sunny," "Sunny," "Yesterday." First verse, vibraphone. Ding. Yeah, there's sort of you know it's like an answer, you know, or anyway, so. I had this idea to do pedal steel. So we got a guy from the East, Joe Grass, who's from Moncton. Great, you know, songwriter, performer, producer up here. And a great bass player who I'd worked with on one of my albums, Morgan Moore, and vibraphone. So it's pedal steel, vibraphone, me on vocals and acoustic and upright bass. And so I wrote some songs that I wanted those guys to mix, you know. And it and it came through. It worked. You know, it was fun.
Nice.
And so that was a nice, you know, acoustic experiment. And we did some old tunes. We did some of our own tunes, you know. So that was the that was the latest album. And we were live off the floor.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. You sent me some tracks. How about we play one? Do you want to pick one?
Sure. Well, I guess we would play We Were in Love, because that's one that I wrote with this idea of the mix of ambient vibraphone sort of creating an atmosphere. It's a love song, kind of just images, but the idea of the tune was this kind of hook in the chorus, which was that, you know, when something's over and you're not with this person, you know, there is this part of you that if you really go there would say, but damn, you know, we were in love. Like we had this once in a lifetime special thing. And that's the kind of idea of this tune. But anyway, you hear the vibes and the pedal steel mixing really nicely.
Nice. Okay, We Were in Love.
showed me stars. You set me free out on the waves. I learned to sing this little tune. It was a sweet twilight melody. I followed you when you followed me into a reverie on that boat under the moon. And we drifted that way till we struggled.
I've got a note here that you were born in Toronto.
Yes. My dad was from the Maritimes. We were living in Toronto, and I was the sixth, his sixth child. And I think he just wanted to be somewhere maybe more affordable, closer to family. So we moved back there, and I stayed there until I was in grade 11. And then I finished grade 11, and sadly, my dad was an accountant. He got transferred to Montreal. So we came up here in 85 for 1 year. Mm-hmm. And then I went off to university, and I went to Acadia, and I ended up in Prince Edward Island with a girl from Montreal, and we conceived a child, and so she came back to Montreal to have that child, and so I came back to co-parent. We never got right. married, but we co-parented our daughter, who's now 33, so I came in 92, yeah.
So you've settled in and you have no desire to move to Spain or anything, but at this point?
Well, it's not that. I mean, Montreal is, my wife is from Belgium. She's from Brussels. And there's really, this is the city that she would like to live in if we have to live in Canada. She might live out west. But yeah, I mean, no, I don't see us moving. I think when you get to Montreal, you live here, it's like, where would you go? And so we're pretty committed to staying here. It is a good musical town. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's necessarily the best town for an English songwriter, if anyone's asking for my advice. And not because it's not a rich terrain to get ideas and lots of interesting people in a beautiful, fun city, et cetera, and beautiful. But more that it's the industry here is more of an Anglo or sort of a Francophone industry.
Francophone, yeah.
Which is great, but it's a little harder and, you know, it's not a – so that's all to say. I'm not leaving. I like it here and I've
– Here's something I don't often do. I'm going to play one of the tracks that is a cover. So Rob recorded this Warren Zevon tune titled Mutineer back in 2009. Warren Zevon, a great writer. Here's Rob Lute's take on Mutineer. That is Rob Lute singing a Warren Zevon tune, and I wanted to remind you that you can get the links to all the artists that we play on this show by going to our website, sfhaa.ca. We'd love to see you there. We also have workshops and retreats and all that kind of stuff coming up, so please check us out. We'd love to hear from you. And we return to the final segment of this radio show. The full show is online, and it will be close to an hour and a half, I think, on this one, because it's definitely longer than an hour, and a couple more tunes and that kind of thing. So please check it out online. Here we go, back to the show with Rob Lutz.
So you're doing a, I noticed online, the history workshop, and it's an online workshop.
Yeah.
And anybody can take that? Like, yeah. It's tailored for the general public or for songwriters, or
no,
who do you tailor that for?
I tailor it for the general public. I just taught it as a course at a school in Montreal. It's called Thomas More Institute. It's affiliated with Bishops, but I've been doing this for years. Like, I've always been a geek for history, and lately, last 5 or 6 years, I've been really getting into it. And so... No, it's for anyone, and you go to my website, roblutz.com, and right on the front page, there's a link to it. It's going to be 8 weeks, January 7th to February 25th, every Wednesday, 6:30 to 8 o'clock on Zoom. And
Eastern time.
Eastern time. Yeah. Very important to say. Yeah. And it's $80 for the average person. I'm also, I have a couple groups that are licensing it from me. Some, you know, one seniors group, one MS Canada group from the West Island here. And I'm doing it in the winter. I did one last year because it's time when people, it's not the greatest to go out in the cold and it's dark. And but the idea of the program is really that when, as I've gotten really into this history, what it's allowed me to do is understand better where everything, what happened, you know, where we are come from. And it really, it's not like, it is kind of like connecting the dots, because I start in literally colonial America and talk about, you know, the earliest settlers were mostly British, Protestant. What did they bring? They brought ballads, the Scottish and British ballads. They were listening to religious songs, but mostly psalms, because they were Puritans. Even though they were separatist Puritans, they were Puritans, and so they didn't believe that singing hymns was okay. They thought hymns were a deviation from what God wanted. God wanted you to use the Bible. So, you know, and then we talk about folk songs that arose in America. We talk about patriotic songs. At the birth of America, there was, you know, we have Star Spangled Banner, but there were, you know, 10 or 15, like, major songs.
Other ones,
Columbia, Gem of the Ocean, Hail Columbia, My Country, Tis of Thee, which is To God Save the Queen, and then multitudes of others that were actually written pre-America, because the deal was Americans were tired of Britain long before the Revolutionary War. They were being taxed without representation. Same thing that happened in the Patriot Rebellion in Quebec in the 1800s, you know.
Right.
So we go from there, and then you have this, you know, this, and then you have also dance music that runs right throughout the century but changes radically. And then you have this crazy thing, the minstrelsy, which pops up, which is, you know, really comes from, well, it predates, but sort of comes from Othello, you know, 1604 or 3 Shakespeare, where you have someone in blackface. And this became a norm over time. And then you had this star of music arise in the Lower East Side of Manhattan called Daddy Rice, Thomas Dartmouth Rice. And then this whole thing springs up of blackface performance, which becomes the television of the 19th century.
Right.
And then you have parlor music, and Civil War was an incredible growth in music because you needed musicians. And if you were a musician in the war, every battalion, every artillery group had a band.
And inspirational, rah-rah-rah kind of...
Yes, but also communicative. There was no walkie-talkies. Every bugle caller had to know 49 calls to communicate with troops.
Right.
And the troops had to know them too. But if you were a musician, you didn't have to fight. As the war went on, they started pulling musicians out. But so there was this growth. But in 1889, there was about 10,000 brass bands in the United States. Wow. Musical literacy at that point in America was unbelievable. And you come to the 1900, you have, you know, mass production of pianos. I mean, a huge number of people could play music and experienced it. And again, we're talking recorded music, really, you know,
player pianos.
There's player pianos, but you had recorded music from the 1870s with the cylinder and the 1880s with the gramophone disc, but moved into the mainstream, you know, after 1900, and really not in a big way until, say, 1910. So people just knew how to play. And so we talk about the birth of ragtime, jazz, blues, into Tin Pan Alley, this amazing, you know, growth, 25,000 songs a year published on Tin Pan Alley, you know, in New York. Like, we're talking, like, you want to talk about some separating the wheat from the chaff, like, there was some really bad songs, but there's some brilliant songs. And so I sort of lead through that. And then you have the birth of country music. You have the birth of radio, 1921. And then you move up through jazz, the birth of jazz, and then the swing era. But then you also have a rebirth of the folk revival, started in the 30s in response to the Depression, because there's a big communist movement in the States. And they believed that you had to go back to the people. This was this, you know, Aaron Copland and Upton Sinclair or these thinkers where it's like, okay, this the elites can't lead us. It's almost like today. They can't lead us, so we have to go back. And, you know, and then you all heading towards, you know, you had the blues moving to Chicago, plugging in. You had jump blues with people like Louis Jordan, who I mentioned. Right. R&B, which was just another name for race records in 1949. That was just black music. It was nothing right. new, but leading to, you know, rock and roll. And you had the sort of perfect song with Rock Around the Clock and the perfect artist to bring this to white teenagers, who was Elvis. And that's kind of where it stops. But there are millions of, like, accidental heroes and unexpected twists and turns. And more importantly, just really cool, interesting songs throughout that journey. So that's kind of what we do. And we do it over eight. And it's, I sort of curate it because we can't touch everything. But we move through enough that you come to understand a little bit of the evolution of this music. And so it's, I really find it interesting. And I think because of that, I think people kind of get into it, you know, and we, yeah. So that's kind of what we do.
Is the title track off Walk in the Dark, a 2017 album by Rob.
So on your own songwriting, I imagine all this history has guides you into the, kind of some of the styles that you have. Because I've hear a lot of flavors in your stuff in subtle ways often, right? And I guess predominantly you're kind of, what would you call, blues-based sort of, or?
Yeah, folk blues, folk I'd say, blues, you know. Yeah, I would say so. I'll go anywhere like that, I try to let myself go anywhere, probably limit myself. But yeah, that's where I am. But yeah, this stuff has really opened me up to some other ideas for melodies and lyrics. And, you know, it's interesting because when you're studying this stuff, it's like I get so interested in what happened and the perfection of some of these pieces of music that I, you know, sometimes I don't go there myself in the same way. It's hard to explain, right. but it definitely has influenced my writing and, but in a sense, you know, it's almost more that it's opened my mind to the possibilities,
right,
of
right.
all these different types of music. And there's no right or wrong. There's no good or bad. There's just a million ways to do it, you know?
Gotcha.
And that's what I find really cool.
With your new album, you've got a number of tunes on it. And so you've got some songs that kind of are historical as well on that album?
Yeah, we do. We have, I think we have three or four covers. There's one song right. in French, Parlez-moi d'amour. But we have a few covers. And we were trying to go to kind of bring blues and pedal steel into Tin Pan Alley. And so one of the songs right. that we did was one of these tunes where you listen to it and you look at it structurally. It's become a very popular song in Manouche, lack of a better term, gypsy music. But it's it was a song from 1921 or 22, and it's by Isham Jones, wrote the music. He was from Ohio. He led a big band. He was a saxophonist, led a big band in the 20s, late teens and 20s in New York. They played the Charleston, the sort of definitive version of the Charleston. He was a great composer. He wrote the music to It Had to Be You, for example. And his partner in that song and in the song that I was on the record, it's called I'll See You in My Dreams, was Gus Kahn, Gerson Kahn. He was from Koblenz. It wasn't Germany. Called Germany. It was called the Kingdom of Bavaria, I think. He was born in 1886. Came to the States in when he was about 8 years old. He came to Chicago, and he wrote Yes, Sir, That's My Baby, Making Whoopee, Dream a Little Dream of Me, all these tunes. And, you know, so anyone who wants to learn a second language, he learned English and became probably the most articulate songwriter, a lyrical writer of his day. So he wrote the lyrics to the song I'll See You in My Dreams. And I think this one, it's harmonically really strange. And when I play it with jazz players, even they're like, wow, that's really interesting and odd. And right. lyrically, it's just a beautiful expression of an unattainable love. So that's one of my favorites on the record. I'll See You in My Dreams.
Cool. Well, here it is.
Though the days are long, twilight sings a song of the happiness that used to be. Soon my eyes will close, soon I'll find repose, and in dreams you're always near to me. Well, I'll see you in my dreams, hold you in my dreams. Someone took you my arms, still I feel the thrill of your charms, lips that once were mine, tender eyes that shine, they will light my way. Thank you. Still I hope and pray through each weary day, for it brings the night and dreams of you. Well, I'll see you in my dreams. Hold you in my dreams. Someone took you out of my arms. Still I feel the thrill of your charm. Lips that once were mine. Tender eyes that shine.
We have reached the end of the radio hour. Please check out the podcast. It continues for a little while after this. Another song or two and more information from Rob Lutz, sfhaa.ca. See you there.
Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present a selection from Sean Bokenkamp, a.k.a. Caesar Schiff's new album, Who in the What? Caesar Schiff reaches into the sonic sack and pulls out new combinations of the influences they're under to produce an 11-track debut album boasting an authentic indie garage DIY feel through self-recording on a Tascam Portis studio. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visit kingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream Who in the What on your favorite platforms and enjoy a selection from it called Potential, here with us now on CFRC 101.9 FM.